From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish. This next story starts on a farm in Waitsfield, Vermont in 1945, where a merchant marine cook named Ralph Ellison was resting after his tour of duty.
One morning, scribbling, I wrote the first sentence of what later became Invisible Man. I'm an invisible man.
That's Ellison years later in an interview for National Educational Television. He wrote that his protagonist, a Negro, as Ellison always said, was young, powerless, and ambitious for the role of leadership, a role at which he was doomed to fail. Earnest, naive, the invisible man travels from his southern hometown to Harlem and runs a gauntlet of discrimination by whites, betrayal by blacks, and confusion about who he is and who he must please. The invisible man tells his story from a basement apartment, a surreal refuge from a world that has cast him away.
Look at the book. It's crazy. You know, it was regarded at the time as an experimental novel, and it's not a piece that you would look at and say, oh, it's a play. But the question popped out of my head, has anybody ever adapted this novel as a film or a play? And Ralph Ellison really didn't want that to happen while he was alive. He'd seen too many good books turned into bad movies.
That's Oren Jacoby, who, along with theater director Christopher McElrone, got the blessing of the Ellison estate to adapt the novel for the stage. Their play debuted in Chicago and is now running at the Studio Theater in Washington, D.C. Jacoby says he decided to write the play while he was working on a project about Shakespeare.
Ellison seemed to understand that kind of rhetoric, and that, like a great Shakespearean speech where a character is faced with a decision about what to do, there's constantly an argument. Do I do this or do I do that? To be or not to be? Do I go underground or do I come out and be part of the world? And I felt that that dynamic made this a very theatrical text and that it just spoke out to me, and I thought, well, I better go for it.
The play, like the novel, opens in that lonely basement apartment filled with newspapers and magazines, a phonograph. The invisible man has wired his ceiling with light bulbs, exactly 1,369 of them, he says. It's an act of sabotage against the power company, but also an affirmation. The invisible man says, light confirms my reality. Director Christopher McElrone describes staging that scene.
We wanted to really capture the essence of his whole. And we don't have exactly 1,369 lights. We're working towards them. But, yeah, we wanted it to start in darkness with just the voice.
I am an invisible man.
And from there, a single light bulb comes on. And as he goes through his prologue, we fill the stage with light.
I'm not a spook like those that haunted Edgar Allan Poe. Nor am I one of your Hollywood ectoplasms. I'm a man of substance. Flesh, bone. And I might even be said to possess a mind. I'm invisible in the sand simply because people refuse to see me. They see only my surroundings.
And really the idea is that he doesn't ever leave the basement room. It's that these visions, these memories from his past, he's revisiting and acting it out, you know, through his subconscious or whatever way you want to interpret it. And the story of the play is whether they give him the power by the end of the play to leave the hole or not.
And as you said, this narrator, the invisible man, much of this is playing out in a story he's telling and therefore his mind and his memory. And maybe you could describe a scene where you weren't quite sure how it was going to come off the page.
Yeah. I think the most challenging scene to stage in the piece is the Battle Royal. The invisible man is invited to give his graduation speech before the town's leading white citizens. And when he arrives, he's asked to fight in the Battle Royal. He's blindfolded, put in a ring with other young African-American men, and reduced to an animal. To stage that scene with an ensemble of 10 blindfolded African-American actors was extremely, extremely challenging. Also because in the novel, you're always in the invisible man's point of view, and how can you capture the invisible man's point of view? And so we rely heavily on video projections, sound and lighting design to try and capture his fear.
Oh,
that's a case where I think you get a visceral punch in the gut because there's blood, there's a guy falling, there's this overt racism. I believe that's a case in which it really works, translating from the novel to the stage. I think that scene works really well.
Actor Tegel Boucher plays the invisible man night after night. In the 3-hour show, he never leaves the stage.
I mean, I feel so lucky and honored to be doing those words. I wake up in the morning, I look forward to doing it at night, and on the weekends, 5 times. it's wonderful. I love the soliloquies and the monologues, and what I'm using to activate them is the audience. The way I'm approaching this, but I am never there alone. That beginning monologue, what that's about, it's me asking the audience to bear witness to this journey I'm about to go on, because I want to get out of this hole. I want to change this, but I cannot do it without this audience. I'm using them to help me figure it out.
I want to ask you something, actually,
okay,
about the audience.
Okay.
Because while the play transcends race, it can sort of make you uncomfortable in a way. And I was in an audience that was almost 90% white when I saw it, and mm-hmm. I felt very kind of like, oh no, how are people reacting mm-hmm. to this? And I wondered about you presenting it mm-hmm. to the very faces that in some passages feel accusatory.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think people do feel uncomfortable at times, and I think that's all right. I felt what you're talking about the audience, white audience being there, I felt last night, maybe more than any night since we've been doing the show, that the audience was uncomfortable. I cannot recall a show in which, when I would look at the audience, I would have them turn away from me as many times as they did last night. And I'm not sure why that was. It was peculiar. There is in that monologue too at the end, it is an indictment on what has been done to black people by white people specifically there in other places too.
What else could I have done? All my life I've been looking for something, and everywhere I turned somebody tried to tell me what it was. It took a long time before I realized I am nobody but myself. A grim to death in the street, I am still
I'm still plagued by my grandfather's deathbed advice. Did he mean he must have meant the principle? Affirm the principle on which the country was built, not the men.
Affirm the principle on which the country was built, not the men. At least not the men who did the violence.
Not the men. At least not the men who did the violence. And the progeny of those men are in the audience at night, and they know it.
Who is the invisible man today?
I think in a lot of ways it's the same person. I mean, I feel in a lot of situations, a lot of places, I am still the invisible man. And the invisibility, it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. I mean, I still feel when I go into certain stores, a lot of stores, I am looked at in a way that a white person wouldn't be looked at. So that's invisibility in terms of not being seen literally, but not being seen as a human, but being as a type. And I think something goes off in certain heads. I think that still happens.
As it says in the play, the context around you
exactly,
and not.
Exactly. And I don't even know if that's going to ever, if we're going to ever be without that.
Actor Tegel Boucher, who performs the title role in the play Invisible Man, a character who sits alone in that basement apartment with only the voice of Louis Armstrong on the phonograph for company.
To be so black and blue, oh, I'm white inside, but that don't help my case.
After Washington, the play moves on to Boston, and playwright Orrin Jacoby and director Christopher McAroon say the script is still evolving.
How will it end? Ain't got a friend. My only sin is in my skin. What did I do to be so black and blue?